Ladies, gentlemen, boys, girls, whoever you are, wherever you are, and whatever you feel like being tonight, you're here with us live tonight on Thirsty Thursday, one of the last few episodes of Thirsty Thursday, because very soon we will be switching over to Wet, Wild, and Wonderful Wednesdays. So that's not a joke either. That's actually a thing. Matt's schedule, my schedule, Ray's schedule, and even J-Pink's schedule have gotten a little bit busier on Thursdays and into Friday. So we are embarking on a new adventure. I'm not sure that we have a specific date for that yet. I do know it'll probably be sometime in March.
Nope.
So I'll tease that out there right now.
And we the first March.
Oh, is it the first?
The first Wednesday in March. Yeah.
The first March. The first March was very long ago. We weren't there for that. We did not have a show back then.
See, this is why it's got to move. It can't be on Thursdays.
Literally, Thursdays are this, remember the if you're old enough. And I know Ray is, I think Aldo might be, but the This Is Your Brain on Drugs commercial, that in the frying pan.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like I was in one of those
commercials. I'm not on drugs, but my brain is like the egg in the frying pan right now. So
Aldo, you're the spokesperson. You're the model.
Yeah, I should be.
Telly has asked, I think asked. There was no punctuation here, but he has suggested kindly that we maybe consider Wet and Wrinkly Wednesday. So, you know, if it's only going to be Wet and Wrinkly Wednesday, if you watch us and your pool does not have a heater, all right, or if you got a pond, if you're a pond guy. All right. Listen, so we were supposed to have a guest tonight, Lawn Monster. However, his old lady has kidnapped him, taken to a concert, and God knows what lewd and lascivious things will take place after a concert, because listen, nobody goes home and just goes to bed after a concert. That's right. Let's go. He has offered us some materials that he would like us to review, which we'll do. We won't do this right away. We'll see if there's any questions out there, because we will take some community questions. It is really, for all intents and purposes, this is our final show of February. Next week's Leap Day, February 29th, doesn't really count. We do have a special Leap Day guest, though, that I am super pumped to have. I know Ray is. I know Matt is definitely. Matt has been hounding this gentleman for the better part of a year and a half, I think, to get him on the show. So John Emerson, who is with the University of Delaware, he's a, I believe he's getting his PhD right now, if I remember. I think he's in that realm right now. But anyway, has a master's degree. He's doing some really excellent research and has, I think, some complementary thoughts and approaches to turfgrass management as a whole, very similar to ours. So, we'll kick it with him next week, Thursday, and I believe J-Pink, that will be our final Thursday show for the next long while. So, without further ado, it is that time, and joining us this evening, we have two very special guests. We have, obviously, Ray Ito and Aldo Beltran. Gentlemen, how are you doing?
Al Gucci here.
Huh. I'm rolling.
And just to tease Ray a little bit, Aldo clearly did a wardrobe change and put that Waffle House shirt on, because Ray, I think the only reason that we can get Ray to stay in Hawaii is if they either opened a Waffle House or they allowed a Celeprin and Queen Clorac to be used in Hawaii.
Yeah, I was going to say a Celeprin.
It was really the only two ways I can see Hawaii salvaging Ray's residency. So Hawaii, if you're listening, you know, you got your chance here right now. So okay.
Well, your state, you know, of favor.
What? Here's the thing is that Waffle House, not happening. Quinn Clorac, no way. So guess what that means, guys?
Hey. Listen, I think there's been a number of overtures made over the years, and I don't think it's going to take much at this point to swing you back here to the States, where you belong.
Oh no, it's not going to take me much convincing. It's just going to be a matter of matter of timing, and I have good word from some of the people that I currently work with right now that they intend to leave Hawaii as well. So
I mean,
when they fly, I literally don't have a reason to stay here.
Mm.
once they fly. I mean, just putting that out there.
So again, if you have empty property, if you want to donate to the Ray, to the CONUS fund, go ahead and hop on that. All right. So gentlemen, we'll take questions from the chat and those can be ongoing. Jay Pink will do his best to log those into our private chat and we'll keep up with those. There is one I just noticed here at the top of the chat that I'll kick off with. We'll get to the wand monster stuff. It's an interesting little thing that he wants us to do. He's just going to dissect and go through his program. And there's some other things I've pulled off of the interweb, specifically Facebook, that are both concerning and probably deserve some conversation tonight too. So we'll try and dive into that. First, though, the Connecticut Cubanican has asked us, what type of sprayer would you recommend for a 15,000 square foot lawn? I have a zero turn mower and can purchase a 15 to 25 gallon tow sprayer, a 5 gallon backpack, or something like a 12 gallon push sprayer, like a Turfex even. I would only like to do some foliar apps for herbicides and micros, but I have only done granular apps the last 4 or 5 years, excuse me. Turf Type Tall Fescue, I'm a DIYer with the best lawn within my zip code. Okay. All right, so there's a lot going on there. 15,000 square foot, he gave you a few options here, but gentlemen, what starts rattling around your brain when you think about that size of a lawn, which is bigger but not huge, like some on this panel, and, you know, where does that hit you?
I think right away, 15,000 square feet, a backpack's not going to do it unless you're willing to fill up 4 or 5 times, or three, maybe 4 times for this. I think if you already got something like an ATV or something like that, like a side-by-side or something like a utility vehicle like that, get yourself a tow behind. 15 gallons will do it. I think the 25, you know, just for the extra volume, that's what I would run with. Backpack, no way. And a 12 gallon push, could do it. I would be, you know, I'm in it for the volume, so I'd go with the tow sprayer.
Yeah, although I'm probably with you too, and right off the bat, knowing that I am a volume guy as well, you'd see me rig up a 25 to that mower or UTV in a heartbeat. Okay? That 25 is getting attached to that mower or UTV. It's also getting a upgraded pump and an actual boom, because here's what I've seen on most of the tow-behind sprayers that's extremely concerning. It is, they like to throw on a floodjet nozzle on a boom spaced at 40 inches apart. And here's the thing about using a floodjet nozzle like that. Your application out of that is very hit and miss. It's really hit and miss. And also, the other consideration that I have is that, you know, when you have a floodjet set up to spray that wide, I cannot imagine you being able to, color within the lines. There's going to be so much overspray on the edges. It's not funny. And if you have prized flowers or shrubs near the lawn, kiss those goodbye with a floodjet setup.
Yeah. That's a thing. It's like those are meant. Here's at a bigger level. The pool behind sprayers are made for like wide open ground. They're not meant for like trimming up against a flower bed or, you know, dodging around a patio that has like 3 different radii as you weave in and out of a hardscape or something like that. That's just not what they're meant to do. In a trailered situation, right? You'd have to swing out so hard in and around these things to get them close to the edges. It's just not possible or practical, right? Just from the steering aspect. The other part too is that, you know, they are, like what Ray said, the amount of drift you're going to get off these is massive. Now, that being said, I think what you could do if you were trying to deploy something like this, and it depends on the landscape layout around your house and around the rest of the yard and things like that. But, you know, I could see a situation where you use a 5-gallon backpack as a trim, right, to trim around all these areas and kind of give yourself a little bit of room to turn around. You know, use a spray dye indicator or something like that so that you have an idea of where that, you know, kind of start stop point is for your sprayer. And it might actually be, if you're going to do this, you do, you know, you do the pull behind spraying first and kind of figure out, okay, how far and how close can I get up to and what do I have to trim in after the fact? There's different schools of thought. There are different ways you can do it. Now, the other thing too, from my experience with these pull behind sprayers, is they, the continuum of these range from incredibly poor and really shitty to really good. And there's not a whole lot in between, unfortunately. And I mean that both from a quality of build and also a price point. I'm going to go back and look here. I'm going to throw this link up and let J-Pink pull this bad boy up. I think this is probably the... Go ahead, Ray, while I'm doing this.
And Ryan, there would be a third way, since you mentioned backpacks, because...
There's a three-way? Where?
No, there's a third way. There's a third way to do this. And the third way to do this is... I can see myself covering up to a half an acre in a day with a backpack. You know, I do that routinely.
True story. Lushy, our good friend of the program, Lushy used to work for the rec department in the town where he lives. Mm-hmm. And routinely for a period of like 3 or 4 years would spray like 2.5 to 3 acres of ball fields, like baseball outfields, with a backpack mm-hmm. sprayer, and it would take him like 3 days to do it. Awful.
Okay.
Cool and unusual person.
And I told Lushy that with my setup or how I'm set up, I could do those ball fields like literally almost all in one day.
Yeah,
acres at a time.
Just get a ride on. All right, let me see if I can find this real quick on the... Oh, go ahead, continue.
Okay, and our Connecticut friend is asking what kind of nozzles would we fit on his toe behind, and I think we would use like the T-Jet AIC nozzles, and the T-Jet AIC nozzles are pointed downward and spaced at 20 inches apart, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. And that is where, in order for a toe-behind sprayer to work, we'd have to make sure that there is no irregular boom spacing and no odd nozzle orientation, because you know when you have a floodjet nozzle, due to the nature of the floodjet nozzles, a other type of nozzle will end up getting pointed straight back. Because the way a floodjet nozzle is made is the tip is designed to be held parallel with the ground rather than perpendicular like a conventional fan nozzle.
That makes sense. That makes sense. And nozzle orientation is important. The other thing, too, with this that I see, too, is for the types of products that we want to use, if they're strictly liquid only, but if there's anything in there, like even humic acid products on these less expensive, you know, the ones you buy at TSC or like Northern Tool, those ones, the electric pumps that these things use do not tolerate anything that is super viscous or anything that has any type of sediment or
dissolved water. Solids in them, right?
Yeah, doesn't like it. And you're going to be replacing pumps left and right. So this model here, and I believe that our friend Some Beach has this one or bought it at one point. FS Manufacturing. These guys are out of Fargo, North Dakota. They make some pretty badass stuff. It's not cheap. I know that a couple of years ago, this sprayer here with the boom and the pull behind was like just north of $1,000. So you get what you pay for. And if, you know, if I look at that and extrapolate, all right, I'm going to buy, you know, three of those Northern Tool ones and completely part out and replace and do all this other stuff over the course of so many years, you know, all this stuff is, you can buy the parts individually, you can get them replaced, you know, the wheels are good, the bearings are good, all the little things are kind of taken care of. It's also got, you know, a wand, so you can do some wand spraying with it and whatnot too. So you could conceivably, without having to have a backpack, go out and use this, provided that your concentration, your calibrations are correct between your wand and your boom, go out and do that sort of trim pass work, so to speak, like we were talking about, against landscape beds, hardscapes,
yes,
so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. And then turn around, pull that sumbitch around, and go ahead and spray all your stuff. So if you're looking for something that's not your basic bitch, you know, fertilizer or the Turfex push is much more than that. Okay, so there you go. So he's saying he can manage $1,000. Reach out to the folks there. I think everything is kind of like a individual price point. You know, the boom is extra, so on and so forth. So check it out. Talk to those people. Get it shipped to your place. Pull it around with something.
And have fun.
Have a blast.
And have fun. And yeah, have fun. And I believe looking at this boom, if I'm not mistaken,
mm-hmm.
this is the good boom because it looks like this boom is already oriented correctly to take standard flat fan nozzles pointed downward, if I'm not mistaken.
That is correct. I mean, that is correct.
So this is because my beef with the less expensive sprayers is they give you that flood jet setup and the nozzles are pointed straight back if you try to change those to a conventional flat fan, and that's not going to do it. Yeah, you do not point flat fan nozzles straight back. I mean, you just don't do that. So I think if somebody wants an off-the-shelf rig that's ready to go without extensive modification, I think this is it. This is a good choice, because what do you always say, Ryan? Looking
cool cheap ain't cheap. Cool. And looking looking cheap ain't cool, and looking cool ain't cheap.
Yep. Remember I mean that's exactly the point here, is that why not spend a little money, unless you're up for getting something and then having to do a lot of FAFO with it. I mean, that's that's where I'm at. And as far as the nozzles go, the nozzles are easy provided your boom is configured correctly, because everything nowadays uses those quick T-jet caps and nozzle bodies. So it's as simple as going up there, unlocking one nozzle, and then putting another one on. I mean, that is just super, super easy. So, yeah. And good point about that wand and hose, because, you know, if you put on matching T-jet fan nozzles on the wand, it is not hard to just trim out all the areas that you cannot feasibly do driving. It's not hard. And likewise, I still remember this.
You don't got to fill up a backpack to do that either.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, still remember, one shot deal.
Yeah, because I still remember this one big grass field that I had to do, and I used an 8-nozzle boom on the majority of it, but there were certain areas where I switched out to my small 4-nozzle boom handheld, and I did the rest of it like that, running off of the hose reel. So, yeah, if you have the ability to do both, that's the best. And no backpacks, although I could theoretically have done it with a backpack. I'm not opposed, because after all, I've got 7 gallons at my disposal.
It says his yard is fairly open, so that's a good thing.
That's also a good
thing. So I think, a tow behind might be it. Tow behind might be it for him.
I like it.
Quite possibly. Yeah.
All right. Let's see here. All right.
Woodchopper has said, in regards to application rates for a new PGR, cool season lawn with a height of cut of around 3 inches, should I stick to the fairway and rough rates on the label to start with? I don't know. I don't want to correlate type of grass or cut of grass with, let me just go ahead and look at the label. I'm three assuming, inches. Yeah.
3 inches, I don't even think there's and
there's a something. Is there a section for rough?
He's saying
fairway.
I don't know that there is. I'm pulling it up right now here, and I will send this to Mista Pink. Now,
what is?
Has he started already, or he?
Hopefully, he's in planning stages, because I can't imagine anybody needing PGR at this time of the year, except for maybe.
It sounds like So fairways and roughs are together. And on the label, it's shown as a 280 to 350 GDD rate. And on cool season, 8 to 16. That's what I thought it was. Okay, so just wanted to make sure. 8 to 16, if I'm running cool season alone, I'm running at 12 ounces to the acre. So right in between the 8 and the 16. And generally speaking, that growing degree day window is pretty much on the money. Like, and if you remember correctly, that the difference between a new and T-Nex is that, you know, there's kind of two parts as we rate or measure PGRs, right? So there's the amplitude, how much it suppresses growth, and it then the regulate, residual,
yes,
how long that lasts out. So whereas T-Nex, Primo Max, as you might see it, especially if you're a Ron Henry watcher, if you are, hi. hey, girl, hey. So if you are, that curve for the amplitude goes up much higher, much quicker, and falls precipitously pretty quick, and then it bounces back up, right? So when it comes out of regulation, it bounces back up higher. What we know about a new, generally speaking, is that the amplitude is not nearly as high, right, in terms of the growth suppression, as compared to T-Nex or Primo. However, the residual is a lot longer before it falls off really quickly and then bounces back up into rebound. So, you know, if I'm a homeowner, I'm a DIYer especially, or even an LCO where, you know, it might be a little bit more irregular when I get out the properties. The nice thing about a new is that it does give you a little bit more cushion, if you will, on your re-app intervals and things like that, to where, you're not suppressing growth as much, and that's okay. It's just that you don't have to reapply quite so often with it. So take that for what it's worth. As far as rates and everything like that, it's, you know, it's a late gibberellic acid inhibitor, just the same way as T-Nex is. So you can stack these, meaning, and that stacking is not a good thing. Stacking means that you're applying, you know, too short within the interval or the window. So just remember, when times when it's warmer out, it's going to shorten your window up. And times when it's cooler out, it's going to lengthen your window. That's a general way to think about it. You can get more into the growing degree day thing. We could take that all apart right now, but in order to keep this moving, just think about it that way, very simply, right? Cooler times, let it go a little bit longer. Warmer times, shorten that up just a little bit. And I think your 12 hour rate is going to be A-okay. Gentlemen, anything else to add there?
Okay, one more thing is that, speaking to the way that a new actually performs, a new is one of those late PGRs that tends not to have as much of the rebound effect versus Trinexapac. Because the deal with Trinexapac is that it will regulate very intensely. However, once that turf is off of that regulation, the rebound growth from that Trinexapac application can be epic. So that's the difference. Whereas with a new or proxidione, the once that grass is off of regulation, I tend to see less rebound or surge growth as it's coming off of regulation. It tends to be a very smooth transition back into normality.
It almost buys you, like, you're late on your re-app interval, like, it almost buys you a day or two where you're gonna start seeing, like, oh bro, it's like you know, coming back with a vengeance. You're not going to get that rebound you're going to get from like just straight T-net. Mm-hmm. That's what exactly. I mean. But like, if let's say you're supposed to apply tomorrow, like, oh well, you'll be all right. Like, if you are late, if you're late, this is the only time when it's okay to be late. Not to think, oh my god, I'm
oh, although, oh,
keep moving, boys.
Those weren't tears on her belly. All right, pull out, man, pull out. Okay, let's see what we have next. Brett Schmidt wants to know, I'm planning to integrate sulfentrazone into the first three rounds in the spring for a total of 12 ounces per acre. At 4 ounces per acre, is this relatively safe with up to a quarter pound of urea or AMS, prodiamine, and post-emergent? I'm assuming we're talking about cool season here. Just taking a guess. Gentlemen, what do you think about that approach on cool season? I know you and I all collectively, respectively, have talked about the dismiss thing in the spring offline, but why don't we bring that discussion to the people? What do you think about the dismiss?
I know that I've seen this conversation happen many times, especially with Ray and guys like Lushy and other people that have been on here discussing, you know, the emergent mm-hmm. properties of sulfentrazone and how they can affect your nuts edge, you know, pressure. And the first three rounds is the time to do it.
Yes,
100%. You know, going down in the spring, early spring, and just get ahead of it before, you know, it hits, and then it's like fighting it for summer.
Yeah, this is where, if you can get this down in your first three rounds of app, and specifically plan on being done applying sulfentrazone before your average or normal daytime temperatures hit 85 degrees. You do not want to be applying your last sulfentrazone app when it's already in the 80s. And the reason why you don't want to do that is because once you get into that near 85 degree mark, sulfentrazone then becomes rather corrosive, especially to cool season grasses. It'll burn. And likewise, the other way to deal with this is it is theoretically possible to condense this into just 2 6-ounce applications per acre early in the year. But here's what Lushy told me about doing that. It's a hot app.
Mm-hmm.
It's very hot. I mean, that's you have no
even that early.
Even that early, yeah. 6 ounces per acre sulfentrazone is hot. 8 ounces per acre sulfentrazone, try to do it all at once. Oh, wow. You can, but not recommended.
All right. Yeah. So, what about the addition there of the nitrogen, the prodiamine, and potentially some other post-emergent herbicides? So first, let's take this apart. I don't see any issue mixing that with prodiamine particularly, other than you have to water in that prodiamine and when are you going to do that, or have, you know, rainfall, mm-hmm. things like that. So I'm always weird about mixing pre and post. I understand, you know, sort of the efficiency standpoint of it, but I don't think that there's anything wrong with that from a mixing perspective, gentlemen.
I don't see a performance issue with it either.
The only question I have is this all getting sprayed including the quarter pound of nitrogen?
I think
if
that's
so,
what
I would want a lot of volume, like 2 gallons.
Well, I was gonna say, so that's that, so we'll get to the spray here in a minute, because there's another
application
to this too, application details. What about post, if I'm mixing on cool season here, and our good friend Paul Smith down in North Carolina, who is mute on the phone but very very much active on the keyboards, it's just the way he rolls. I love you, Paul. is what post-emergent herbicides would you be okay with mixing with on cool season, knowing that Dismiss is also going out? You know, and you know, I don't know if they're going to see any direct phyto or if there's really been any modeled testing out there that says, oh yeah, like if you mix this and this, but just keeping in mind that it's already a little hot. And Paul is saying too, I didn't clarify, Paul is saying that at 6 ounces to the acre with a ride on, you will track cool season grass. That's his warning. So yeah. Ray, go ahead. What do you think about the post-emergent aspect here?
Okay. It is already established that sulfentrazone pairs very well with quinclorac, tenacity, and your normal three-way or triclopyr type products. So you're actually getting superior weed efficacy if, for example, you're doing a spring round where you have three-way in the tank and you're adding sulfentrazone. That's going to be your basically take no prisoners type of an application. Yeah, that's going to be it. So I don't see a real negative to it, other than the potential for some possible turf burn. And Ryan, I want to give this back to you because I can see myself even applying something like that, but I have caveats about the application volume should somebody attempt this. So well, I'm going to give that back to you.
I'm going to take this one step further. So volume's important here, right? But other thing too is, it's not an inexact science, but these are the things that you run into, right, when you mix pre and post, right? So volume's important. All right. So if we were going to, you know, just apply that that fertilizer and the prodiamine, yeah, sure, go for it with, you know, a gallon plus, right, per thousand, and send it. Now the issue that we run into though is that, you know, if we go higher than that, we go to 1.5 to 2 gallons. Not to say that our post-emergent herbicides won't be as effective, but you know, there are some concerns there that, you know, we're not staying enough on target potentially, right? So a gallon is, you know, in delivery carrier volume is really, really important. Other thing too here, gentlemen, is nozzle selection, right? Do you go with a flat fan? Do you go with, you know, a raindrop or a turf jet nozzle? Do you split the difference and go with an air inducted nozzle? Again, we're splitting hairs, and you know, if Travis were here, he would just say, I don't care, but he's not. And in this particular case, I do care. So what would you gentlemen, if you had to choose and mash all this stuff together and make yourself a big old turf casserole, spring turf casserole, what are you doing?
Mm-hmm. I think. I would go, well, we're talking about nozzle selection. I am considering that I need coverage if I'm using a post-emergent. If there is zero wind, and like your PSI is right and you're calibrated nicely, use an XR. I have used an XR comfortably, but there's gotta be like literally no wind.
Yeah, or you're
otherwise an errant. Yeah. Or it's going off to your neighbor's tree and you're fucked, right? I an air inducted, an AIXR, AIC. I think that's like, you know, always safe. I want to say regardless. I'm sure there's optimal spray tips for a given situation, especially if it's, you know, this is high volume, you want it watered in right away, or you want like a PGR where you just kind of want to coat everything on top, not worrying so much about like, you know, extra coverage like a fungicide. AIXR, you can, I've used a TT before, and I'm not sure how much of a difference that makes compared to an AIC, but I think an AIC is fine, in my opinion. AIXR, air inducted.
Okay. Air inducted, yeah.
Okay. I'm gonna agree with Aldo as well, and like my preferred method of even applying such a mix like that is, how do you all feel about an AIC tip calibrated to apply at a gallon per thousand, and I lay it down in two opposing directions. And that is strictly to ensure uniformity of application and coverage. I mean, that's kind of how I would do a potentially hot mix like this, so that I don't have an issue with turf burn, and I also don't have an issue with skipped areas where I don't get the control.
Well, and I think that's... Oh, go ahead. I was going to... Okay. No, so I think that's the most important thing there, is with understanding all the complexities that could arise, and the fact that, you know what, generally speaking, are you going to go and have 100% success every single time by mashing up all that stuff in the tank? Maybe not enough to notice, but I would go out there, and if I said, man, you know, I got some crabgrass breakthrough this year, that damn Proniome didn't work. Well, I would go back and look myself in the mirror and say, well, did I apply it under all the right conditions, under the right parameters, right? Or if I didn't get, you know, gosh, there's freaking dandelions out here, and I just sprayed, you know, with Smiths and three-way and whatever. Like, hey, did you do everything right? So I always caution people, if you're not willing to accept lesser than, you know, the best possible result, maybe it's worth making two applications, right? Not saying anybody's wrong that does, you know, one app versus two, but those are things that you need to ask yourself and balance your expectations with the level of work and effort that you'd like to put in. So take it for what it is.
If I can add to that, like,
sure.
There's a lot of stuff that goes to say about, like, herbicide selection is important, right? But so is the execution of it. Very easily, someone could like apply something, you know, oh, hey, Ray told me Celsius Revolver and Quicksilver, right? Mm-hmm. And then someone goes and applies it and just does the dog shit application, and then they can go and mm-hmm. be like, oh, dude, don't ever spray that on your lawn. It's going to kill your lawn. You underdid it. You sprayed it a gallon per thousand according to you, but, like, you know, you finish your spray mix halfway through your application. So, of course, it's like, you know what I mean? Like, it's there's that, and then there's also, yeah, like, you know, volume and too much overlapping. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of that goes into that, but, like, you got to make sure it's applied right, and, you know, not just that you got the top of the line herbicides and the best, you know, adjuvant and all the fancy bells and whistles on your equipment, but you got to put it down right.
Okay, yeah. I'm going to add even further to that, because I suspect our viewer is a commercial applicator. And here's what I'm going to tell you about laying down this kind of a mix. Okay? When laying down this kind of a mix and I'm operating off of a hose reel, I'm a fan of the following two pieces of equipment. Either a single nozzle wand to hold a single AIC tip, or if I have to do substantial area off of the hose reel, then I become a fan of a multiple nozzle boom. At no time, when I'm talking about a post-emergent type application, at no time am I a fan of the Kimlon nozzle. Because Matt asked me the other week, when would I use a Kimlon type nozzle? And I told him the time that I would be breaking out a Kimlon nozzle is if I were going to be laying down more than 5 gallons per thousand square feet of a product that was strictly effective through the soil. I wouldn't be using the Kimlon nozzle for an application that I expect to be retained by the weed leaves. So Aldo said something kind of important too, because he said, oh, what if I told somebody to put down Celsius and Revolver to kill grassy weeds in their Bermuda or Zoysia or St. Augustine turf? Fine and good. They then come back and tell me, oh, this stuff didn't work too good. And then I go back and find out, yeah, guy, you dispensed it through a Kimlaw nozzle at 3 gallons per 1,000 square foot. I wouldn't expect that tank mix to work very well in that case. Not for that application. All right? I mean, this is just factors to consider because herbicides, you got to remember, what is their intended target area? Like when we're talking about a foliar applied herbicide that's expected to be absorbed through the leaves and make contact with the leaves, then I want one type of application equipment. On the other hand, if my product is intended to go through the soil, then I have a bit more leeway. And Ryan, I got to kind of tell you that, you know, the inception of the Kimlon type nozzle?
Yes.
The success of that equipment was based on one thing. Back in the old days, three-way had a rather hot rate of dicamba in it.
Mm-hmm.
All right? And what I know about dicamba is that if I spray that on a broadleaf weed and it reaches the soil and then it gets watered in, that broadleaf weed is done. However, in recent years, the amount of dicamba being applied in even three-way has been reduced due to concerns of injury to trees and shrubs with roots extending into that lawn area, because I still remember what happened when I let somebody apply some dicamba and he was applying in excess of the suggested rate. My friend killed some trees that day. And all they did was make application to individual weeds in the lawn, and those weeds happen to be underneath a tree. So that is speaking to the point that with the classic three-way type herbicides like your Trimec Classic,
mm-hmm.
which is what the Lesco Kimlon gun was designed to apply,
mm-hmm.
you do not have that much concern about the foliage retaining the liquid spray, because whatever rolls off into the ground is going to kill the weed even deader than what happened to be retained by the leaves because of that high dicamba content.
Deader.
Deader. There's your death talk. It's not just death talk, it's deather.
It's deader.
Okay. It's... I think it was a very involved and thorough answer, because it was it seemed like a fairly straightforward question, but there's a lot of pieces to unravel there. So hopefully, thank you for indulging us for. Yeah. Oh, hey.
I don't care.
Oh, man.
Let's see here. Ooh, Woody865 asks, Ray, what's your secret for nuts edge? More than one secret, I think.
Okay.
Well, in
I have
what?
An answer in what?
Yeah.
In what? Because here's
let's
the
just
thing.
Take it. Let's, take that... it. Let's go cool season, warm season. Just break it up.
Okay.
Warm season. Ooh. Certainty plus sulfentrazone. Okay. If I'm talking about cool season turf, then I switch to Celero and sulfentrazone in a program. And, you know, Matt covered actual nutsedge control in a whiteboard video that he did a couple years ago. And that whiteboard video came out not long after Matt met me for the first time. So there's ways to do this, and I think the question that we got asked earlier is kind of important, because my actual secret sauce for dealing with Nutsedge involves getting down sulfentrazone in the spring and then having either Celero or Certainty, depending on grass type, available for application to any breakthrough in the summer. I mean, does that make sense to everybody?
Yeah.
It does.
I mean, I think that, I don't want to say this. I think that Nutsedge is one of the most hard to kill but simple to control weeds that's out there. I think it's really almost a mind fuck for a lot of people, that they get too freaked out by it. So
no, it becomes a mind fuck for people because of how they choose to address it.
I agree.
Because
and make it too complicated.
No, they make it hard on themselves, Ryan. I mean, I agree with you totally. They make it hard on themselves because here's what I see here in Hawaii that turns into the absolute shed fire. Imagine a lawn area with a Nutsedge infestation, right? And here's how people typically approach this that drives me insane. Here's how they treat it, Ryan.
Mm-hmm.
After they've mowed the lawn, that day they send out somebody with a backpack sprayer with either halosulfuron or Certainty to go spray individual Nutsedge plants in a lawn that is absolutely infested with Nutsedge.
After they mowed.
After they mowed. Make that make sense for me.
Yes.
Whereas for
me,
my deal with people is, okay, you have Nutsedge. Yeah, this doesn't look good. I understand. But I ain't putting my goddamn mower on this lawn with all these weeds. That's not happening. What's going to happen first is I'm going to come out with either Monument or Certainty, depending on turf type, and deal with this Nutsedge. And you're also going on the spring sulfentrazone program as well, now that I know you have a problem. And that's how I approach it. And do you know what happens to those guys that want to go down the road of spot spraying Nutsedge after mowing? I see those guys month after month, every month, still spraying. Mm. That's what happens to them. Whereas for me, I hit a lawn with the Certainty or Monument, and I put down my sulfentrazone in the spring, and that is the last discussion that we have about Nutsedge.
Well, you know, listen, just like there are people, as you just described, Ray, keeping the chemical companies in business, there are guys that jerk off with condoms and keep the condom companies in business. So God bless them all.
Yikes.
Let them live.
Yikes. Let them live. You.
All right. Let's see here. Brent, our good friend Brent, Pro Turf Services out of Western Mass Turf. What's your go-to dance move when your biggest pain in the butt customer calls and cancels after they see the new cost of services? Ooh. Well, I think what Brett is alluding to here, Ray, is that there's some customers you'd like to fire, but just don't do it, and then they tire themselves. So let me ask you this. I'll ask you a better question, Ray. Have you ever had an instance, or what is your best story about a customer that you were so relieved that they self-selected out of being a part of Green Dock?
Oh, I have one that dates back to last year. Ooh, this is a fun one because
it's so fresh, it's so raw.
Okay. This is somebody that did the big no-no.
They talked
okay?
to him.
No, the big no-no for me, it better. better, okay?
Better? Oh, wow.
Filipino weed whack job.
They called me and asked why I wasn't there when it was literally raining and 30-mile-per-hour winds all month. Okay? And this was the same person, by the way, who emphasized to me, make sure you do not leave any grass clippings or mud tracks on their flagstone walkways. So by that, I said, you know, I better not even set foot on this property until the rain stops, because I don't want to be that guy that leaves a mess that I got to clean up, right? So this person calls, and this person starts to bargain and negotiate, and I told this person, hey, are you crazy? You look outside, everything is all muddy and wet, and I respected your wishes not to leave a mess on your walkways. So what do we do? I mean, because sensible thing to do is to wait until it dries out so that I don't leave a mess. And let's just say that I got a call back and said, oh, okay, thank you, but we're parting ways. And I said, good luck. Good luck. And, you know, to answer Brent's question, I think I did either a Snoop Dogg or a Tupac dance that day. If you know, you know.
Well,
if you know.
I don't know. I really would like to see Ray dance on video sometime. I'd be all for that.
You think Ray can Dougie? Any cat daddy? You know, some Bay Area guys. Anybody know what that is? All right. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, it's yeah. All right, let me see here. Who is next? Telly Coleman has a comment, not a question, and he says, T-Nex is like smoking crack. Burns hard and fast, rebounds hard. Anu is like eating edibles. Lasts long, comes on strong, and fades slowly. I'm not up on all that stuff, but it sounds relatively accurate.
So,
well done,
Telly.
It sounds
about right, and I think Aldo can kind of confirm that too, right? Is that... yeah, Anu is more like doing
both of those sides of the analogy, sir.
That's what I thought. That's what I thought, because I have just about no knowledge of such things. Okay, I don't. I mean, I absolutely have no knowledge of that. So yeah, Telly, I guess it would be like messing around with an edible in that. It hits and then it lingers. It stays.
All right, let's see here. Connecticut Cubanican is back again, and he is asking, my soil pH is at 6.1. Cubanican. Mm-hmm. See, I have never used straight AMS. Generally, so pH 6.1. I've never used straight AMS. I've only used some 4600, mostly methylene urea. I usually end the season with a total of 4 pounds of nitrogen per year. And again, he called out earlier that he has turf type tall fescue. If I want to use straight AMS, how many pounds per year before risking pH level dropping too low? That's 6.1.
Connecticut?
It depends.
It says Connecticut, yeah.
It depends. And already, well, Ryan, I have an alternate idea.
Wouldn't feel bad about
for
an application or two.
About our friend in Connecticut.
Yeah.
I have an alternate idea for him. Given that his pH tends to be low, You know, I would rather our friend make an application of gypsum and then supply his nitrogen as either urea or methylene urea. And you know why I want him to do gypsum?
Why is that?
Because gypsum becomes a sustained source of sulfur that does not lower pH further. Whereas if our friend starts hitting AMS, he is going to eventually face his pH drifting downward, and then he needs to worry about getting his pH back up with lime. And that just adds a lot of complexity to his program versus why not just drop down 25 pounds of gypsum and run urea and methylene urea the rest of the year for his nitrogen. Keep it simple. Versus having to chase his pH up and down with AMS and then lime. What do you think, Ryan?
I think that he shouldn't fret too much over this. I think that if you have some AMS in the barn, go ahead and use it.
Use it.
You know, every now and again, it's not going to hurt anything. I wouldn't go out and buy a pallet of it and plan to run up through there. I would say that you hang and live with methylene urea and, you know, straight mineral urea, and you party with AMS occasionally. Use it recreationally. Mm-hmm. How's that?
Nice.
While we're using all the drug analogies,
use it on a 3-day weekend.
Oh, what'd you do? This weekend? 3-day AMS bender, man.
Yeah, it's something to consider too. Like if you're going out with like your first app of nitrogen, or if you're one of those that does the you only fertilize in the fall kind of thing. Maybe hit it with one of those if you're later on in your window. We know that it's an anion, right? So it's not so mobile as urea is, especially if you get a lot of rain. So it might be a little more stable there for you.
Hmm. Okay, so we missed one earlier in the chat. I just slid back up and saw this one. And it's from our good friend Eshot, Eric Schott, who's been on the program before. And if you don't remember him, he had put some Tahoma in his backyard, fell in love with it. He's actually maintaining it with a rotary mower, and it looks pretty good. I know it's sacrilege to Ray, but I'll tell you what, he's got it dialed in at this point. And his question is, he's planning to focus on growing out his Tahoma in the backyard for 2024. His question is, how much prodiamine is going to slow the spread of the Tahoma down? Trying to find the line on where I think it's realistic running distance. I'm not sure what that means, but I think running distance meaning like he wants it to tiller out, and if there's prodiamine out there, it's not going to tiller as well. Oof.
False.
This is an interesting false one. Okay.
False. Provided, you know, your rate of prodiamine is kept moderate. And when I say moderate, I mean I'm thinking
quarter pound.
No more than a pound of actual AI per year. Please don't do what a certain YouTuber suggests and go out there with your annual max as one application during the spring. Please don't do that. Okay, please don't. Sure.
You still got dimension. What do you mean? Just kidding.
But seriously, I have actually employed prodiamine at, say, a half a pound per acre of the WDG during sprigging, and I don't see a negative effect on the sprigs, and I do see effective control of the various grassy weeds that like to squeeze in during a sprig growing. So I don't have a objection to prodiamine at moderate rates. However, make note that is at a pound per year of the actual prodiamine WDG.
Which I thought you would have said like less at first. No, a pound actually surprised me. That's like that's good.
Yeah, well, Aldo, imagine two half pound apps.
Yeah,
split app. I mean, just keep it very moderate. Don't go retarded with it or stupid with it. You know, just don't be dumb with it, because I gotta tell you that the only time I can imagine root pruning out of prodiamine is when somebody is just silly and sees the annual max rate and says, I'm going to apply the annual max rate of prodiamine all at once right now.
Yeah.
Take it off.
2 pounds. Let's go. I guess you can just ask yourself, like, am I willing to, he asked like how much, you know, how of a difference am I going to see in like filling in and spreading or whatever. Right.
Not very much.
I think if, I would say, yeah, I don't think you're going to actually see like a significant difference. If you, let's say you did like a test plot, like it's a part that you didn't spray with prodiamine. I don't think you're going to see like, oh my God, like I shouldn't have sprayed anything. I think,
okay.
I mean, unless you have the wherewithal to go post-emergent with what may or may not come up, then
yeah.
Put it down. And, you know, it maybe risk some time difference, if any.
I'm here to tell you that controlling crabgrass in Tahoma 31 specifically is not a fun task. Not one without peril. So, you know, I think you have to pick your battles. And mm-hmm. I think that you are best suited to use the prodiamine. Give it time. I mean, we've got a Tahoma field, and it's you know, the other thing, Eric, is that it's not going to move quick. We've got some slopes and some areas on a Tahoma field that is now going into its seventh season, and you know, it's abutting right up against cool season, so there's some you know, there's some definite
competition
and you know, encroachment that's going on, but it's not like taken over that, but it's pushed in there. So, you know, a little bit warmer climate where you are, maybe it goes a little faster, but collect your clippings.
Is this Tahoma specifically?
Yeah, Tahoma specifically. Yes, sir.
Okay. So
that's Tahoma specifically. And if I remember rightly, with Tahoma, caution, Eric, do not apply quinclorac to Tahoma. Do not.
You can apply it, but you just don't have to. You do not care what it looks like for 2 weeks.
You don't want to. Yeah, you don't want to. You don't want to. And in actual practice, I'm going to say that the stunting and the damage from the quinclorac is many orders worse than what you would get from a reasonable application of prodiamine. That's my take on it overall, is that the prodiamine is less damaging. And then I also have to caution, do not use pendimethalin or dithiopyr on Bermuda grass that you are wanting to spread out, you know, and colonize an area, because those two herbicides are actually root pruners, to the point where you do that to Bermuda that you want to spread out. What will happen is that the roots from the stolons will be so thoroughly pruned that your turf grass will be floating on top of the area and not rooted into the ground. Be careful.
Okay. All right. We're going to move through these next ones a little bit quickly here. Because rapid we fire. Want to get to lawn care, rapid fire. Johnny Fescue. Hey, Ray, I saw an ad of today for chlorantraniliprole from FNC. I wonder, has the patent run out? Hope so.
It has. Yeah, patent's out on chlorantraniliprole. So that's why FMC is able to bring their product out called Durentis. But
yep.
Make note of that ultra-low application rate for Durentis.
Yeah, it's not significantly lower. It's a little bit lower because the AI is up. I do know that they're running some. I looked into this pretty deeply after I saw that same ad, Johnny, the last couple of weeks. They are running a pretty good kind of a promo rebate program right now to get it out there in the market, and they're selling it in 16-ounce bottles and 64-ounce bottles. And so check with your reps. I mean, there is a price you can get it down as low as like I want to say it's like $66. Now you got to buy a lot. I think where most of our listeners would fall, you got to buy like 8 of them or 4 of them or something like that, and they're like $2,200 a piece. You got like $10,000 worth. But there's other ones. There's other quantity breaks and price breaks that most of our clients or customers or listeners or whoever you want to call them would fall into a price range somewhere between like $97 to $77, and that's just based on volume breakdown of what you buy and things like that. So talk to your reps. It's the same thing. We've been asked that question a lot. It is the same AI, will work the same. There's no difference other than name. And it's a common question.
And price.
That,
and
well,
price. Because,
and I think you're going to see, you know, kind of what, you know, it's, I don't think it's any wonder that Syngenta came out this year with Celeprin Extra, which is their Meridian product, which Ray helped me out here. It's a neonic. What's the chemical name?
Cyamethoxam. And yes. I've had people ask me about that. A Celeprin Extra, and I've told them, oh, for the love of God, please don't use a Celeprin Extra, because, you know, extra. Ryan, I'm not extra. A fan of broadcasting dimethoxam. I'm not a fan of doing it, because do you want to talk about bee toxicity? Dimethoxam is it, as far as bee toxicity. So
Super Saiyan I tell people,
mix. Yeah. Sure. I tell people, why not just focus on getting down a proper application of a Celeprin or now Durantis and just be done with it. You know, just because I'm just not a fan of broadcasting dimethoxam, because, you know, the thing about thymethoxam is that the properties of thymethoxam are such that that is a neonicotinoid that is so mobile and soluble and active that it can even be used as a curative treatment for various insects. Hello, Matt, Asami, and friends. What's up?
Hey.
Hi, everyone.
Hello.
Real quick, we're gonna jump in and say hey. Obviously, everyone knows Asami. That's my wife. This is Stefan. Stefan is in town. He's from Romania. Took the trip to Tennessee, of all places, to break bread, have some drinks, and do all the fun stuff we do. Just wanted to jump on, and I'm gonna give him a second to talk here in just a minute, and say that. Right. So, as a group, we have been working collective on a project for how long, Demay? 2 years, 2.5 years, maybe 3 at this point. And it's slowly started to come to fruition. And especially since July, everything has accelerated in a way that we didn't know was actually going to pan out. And so obviously that's why people are in from Romania right now to talk about this. So I don't want to give away a whole lot right now, other than what we have wanted to do was take a lot of what we talk about, a lot of what we emphasize in making changes in the industry, and then how do you convert that into a piece of software that lawn care professionals can utilize in their day-to-day business to eliminate a lot of the pain points that they face, whether that be through raw material acquisition, whether that be through decision making while out in the field, and then being able to understand how those costs end up affecting your business. And I think that's something we've even talked about a lot over the winter moving up to this point. And it was totally a passion project. And so, you know, here we kind of are, and we're going to give a good, valiant college effort at making it a reality. Stefan, if you don't mind, just take a second, say who you are and why you're here.
Okay, hello everyone. My name is Stefan Kira. I'm here to disrupt the turf industry with these guys, with my background in engineering and agriculture. When we met, Matt told me you have a nice AI product for agriculture. Can you make it for turf and ornamental? And I said, ornamental and what? I didn't know what turf was, so I started digging. And with their help, right now, we are about to launch a great product that brings to market science, real-life experience, and latest technology. So I'm so excited to be here, to be with these guys, and to build this, because beside being a business, this is our dream and this is our passion and this is what we love doing. So it gets my heart racing. Yeah, that's why I'm here.
How about that? We'll tug on your emotional strings a little bit. Two pitch guys giving hard pitches right here, right down your throat. And so anyway, I know a lot of this is going to be seen after the fact. I'm sure there's, you know, one or two people that are watching right now. And I just want to stress that, you know, this has been very much a very chaotic team effort of a lot of trust, a lot of hope, a lot of wishes. it's weird that we've made it this far. And so it was fun to actually sit down here. Have some drinks, some adult cocktails, drink a couple bourbons, eat some real soul food, Southern food.
Real food. Yeah, real good.
Ray, you already know I took him to Waffle House. You already know I took him to Tupelo Honey.
Yes.
So, you know, we did.
Yes,
we
awesome.
Did all the Southern things we were supposed to do. He awesome. Ate collard greens for dinner, so you know it's real.
All right. Awesome.
But, yeah.
And, yeah. Awesome.
That's awesome.
So we're here. We're queer. And anyway, we'll leave y'all alone. I'm going to drop him off. We have to meet with attorneys and all the other fun stuff in the morning. But I just wanted to say thank y'all. Everyone that's watching right now, seriously, thank you. Even everybody on the panel right now. Jay Pink behind the scenes, Brian, Ray, Aldo, of course. Thank you for everything. And we can't wait. He and I, we're going to do some production stuff tomorrow. And we'll give a little bit more information followed by a little bit more information as we get further along into it, show you dashboards, functionality, information that's presented to you, all that fun stuff. And I think it's something that everyone, whether you're a homeowner, whether you have 100 lawn care accounts, whether you have 1,000 lawn care accounts, it's something that anyone can get excited about, because it takes a lot of the guesswork out of it, a lot of the fear that goes into it, a lot of the second guessing. And automates it. So that's nothing that you have to let keep you awake at night anymore. So there we are. Boys, y'all have a good one.
All right, Matt. Stay,
hey, Matt. Looking forward to it.
Asani.
Have a good one.
Nice meeting you, sir, y'all. Senorita. Take care.
If you know, Balamos. You know.
Right.
Look at that.
Right. Mm.
So, all right. We are going to, we will get back to these questions because we have cataloged them. And I know there's a few more. We'll ask Jay Pink to log those in and we'll try and get to these in a later show. We do want to go over Lawn Care Monsters program here in the last, you know, 15 or so minutes that we have left on the program tonight. So Jay Pink, do you want to pull that up? And let's dive into this. Now, I missed the Lawn Care Monster episode, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. I was out of town with the old lady. So I didn't, and I haven't had a chance to really watch all the way through it. I skipped around and watched a few parts here and there. So I know he is in Western Kentucky, and predominantly cool season, if I remember correctly. So as we look at this here, let's just take a dive into this here. So Ray, help me out from the questions that he originally had back during his episode. How might that informed what we're looking at here, and maybe questions or information that we can provide?
Okay. This is the Lawn Care Monster, and he has mostly cool season turf, non-irrigated, in Kentucky, and he's also applying out of a permagreen. So, you see round number one and round number two? That's going to be probably AMS being spread, plus these liquids being applied as a tank mix through that permagreen, through the liquid delivery system.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's the background info. And this is on non-irrigated, cool season, a lot of turf-type tall fescue.
Okay.
Just to give you some background, so.
All right, so that being said, okay, so round one, going out with AMS, and I believe that product is a, that's a half and half combo of AMS and urea, that 3300.
Amidas, yep. Yeah, that's the part, part urea, part. AMS, the combo, I'm personally a fan of the hotter stuff called 2600.
Ooh. Nitrate, yeah, a little bit more AMS.
No, that one is
nitrate?
Ammonium nitrate and ammonium sulfate.
Oh, I see. All right. So let's see here. So he's going at the full rate of prodiamine liquid. Mm-hmm. Going at the 4 ounce rate of sulfentrazone. So he's on the 444 program here with sulfentrazone, which I think we talked a lot about and gave him some things to think about. And he's going with Cool Power here. Again, at a time in February and March in Western Kentucky where the weather can vary widely. So we talked, it's interesting that this is here, and we briefly looked at it, but didn't really put two and two together with some of the questions that have come in. So, you know, first app, I'd say Lawn Care Monster, go back and watch the whole 15-minute dialogue that we had about a very, very similar approach here. Running it, obviously, with granular fertilizer in this case as opposed to sprayable, but some of the same considerations in terms of application integrity, we'll call it, right? You know, carrier volume, nozzles, when you're spraying, and all that kind of stuff. All right, so coming back in round two here, April, May, we've got the same product. I don't have a rate there, but boy, I hope that's not another pound. That's, you know, I could almost make the case that you could probably skip that February, March with a pound and push that to April, May, and you might not make everybody happy, but you'll make more people than not happy in doing that. And I think I say that understanding that this AMS in late November, again, which I think is the Amidas product here, that's labeled 3300, that, you know, that app should carry you through until, you know, at least April, if not May, right? So that's one thing I'll say is I don't see a whole lot of benefit to going out with a pound of a all-mineral quick-release product in February, March, even that far south, unless it's a new lawn you haven't treated the year prior. So that would be my caveat there. I don't know, gentlemen, any thoughts on that? Am I being too much of a stick in the mud?
No, Ryan. In fact, you're bringing up something that's kind of concerning me in that I'm going to ask Lawn Care Monster, do we really need this much nitrogen in the spring? I mean, I'm just going to ask that overall. Do we really need to do that? Because if you are doing AMS and slow release in your late summer and fall rounds, that's more nitrogen than what an established turf type tall fescue lawn needs. That's really more than it needs. And I know Ryan is fond of saying something in that your fiscal year for cool season grass starts at the end of summer. It is not hammering it with fertilizer first thing in spring. That is what all of the lawn turkeys do. They hammer too much nitrogen in the spring and early summer, and then they give their customers regrets from the nitrogen being applied at a less than ideal time.
We have a turkey sound.
If I can add to that, Ray, around that time, you're saying you may not need the nitrogen in February, March. I'm looking at soil temps here, and you're still in the 40s.
Yeah,
it's still
like,
cool,
just,
isn't it?
Even
40s,
in a year where it warms up.
Yeah.
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 What would you say? Really, what was the trend on that? What's the trend that you see there as you're looking?
Yeah, averaging between the beginning of February and the March, 32 degrees all the way up to 51 degrees. 54.
Oh, okay. Okay. And you know, at that point, my real question is do you even have grass that's growing? And if you applied sufficient nitrogen in the fall, that nitrogen is most likely going to carry over into that February, March timeframe, and maybe even into April and May, like Ryan said. So, yeah, so it's like, why are we doing so much in the spring? It's like, what is it for? What do you intend to accomplish with that much nitrogen in the spring? I would even say majority of your nitrogen should be between August through November. I'm going to be a real stick in the mud and say that most of your N on turf type tall fescue should be at that time period. Talk to me again if, say, you're making applications to, say, Zoysia or Bermuda, then it's different. But then if we're talking about turf type tall fescue in Kentucky, we really do not see a need for a lot of N going down in rounds one and round two. We don't need it.
So, you know, a couple of things here. One, let's just assume that round two rate is, you know, 2 pounds per thousand. You know, so 0.66 pounds of N per thousand square feet. And, you know, one thing I would also question there too, related to the November application, is, you know, can you reliably and accurately get 2 pounds per thousand, especially if you're going wheel track to wheel track at a 50% rate, going over it twice, can you accurately get 2 pounds out of your spreader? And that's a tough thing to do in some cases, right? So make sure you're calibrated well on that. The other thing too is, so if we do have 3 pounds that we're going to go out in March, we need to sort of replace or move those per se. I would be looking at that September, October time. So, you know, maybe seeding in, you know, the early part of September, something like that. And then, you know, you might have two more apps that are spaced, you know, a little bit apart here, but even so, okay. April, May, all quick release there. I think that might be an opportunity to move that slow release back, Ray. Just to make it a little bit easier on yourself and your life of not putting all quick release down at either, you know, 2/3 of a pound or a full pound in April and May. I think that's got some dire consequences written all over it. Use the slow release and kind of back yourself into summer there. What do you think?
You know, I would be a fan of, say, a half to 2/3 pound in as more slow release during the April-May round, because my preference would be to do what you suggest and feed up the faster release starting in late summer through fall.
Agreed.
Because slow release in fall, does that make a lot of sense to you, Ryan, to put down slowly in full.
There's some validity to it, but you're going to be cutting it off in an area like this, cutting it off in September, right, to really see any benefit from it, and everything kind of goes away after that. So, again, I'm not sure. I'd rather have, you know, full control of it than going in that late August through early November time period. So, all right, so we're effectively saying, hey, cut out round one. Let's move that down to the September-October time frame. Let's keep that November, but also maybe slide it up just a touch, you know, be towards, make sure we're starting that by the 1st of November, no later, because we know that there's diminishing uptake of nitrogen, even in Western Kentucky during this time of year. Day lengths are shorter.
It gets cool.
The evapotranspiration rate of the plant, right? The demand for water, which is actually what's pulling that nitrogen in, gets a lot lower, right? And so not as much nitrogen enters the plant. So overall, I like that. Now let's look at the herbicide and other treatment products here. So we talked about this Venture Zone thing. Another round of Cool Farm, Cool Power. I hope we're not blanket spraying everything there in two rounds. I don't know that that's necessary unless it's a new lawn. I would rather see that. Ray, would you rather see that Cool Power targeted in the April-May round or the February-March round to try and pick away at some of these broadleaves?
You know, for me, I would actually not want to see Cool Power in May. And the reason why not in May is because if you're starting to get hot or warm, Cool Power is not necessarily the best idea because, true to its name, Cool Power is strictly intended for application during the cooler parts of the year because, you know, Cool Power is a wonderful formulation. I love it. But that formulation itself gives me pause when I'm talking about applying that when temperatures could possibly go above 80 degrees. And that is because Cool Power is literally a lovely combination of triclopyr ester, MCPA ester, and dicamba. I mean, Cool Power is fantastic in February and March. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I would absolutely broadcast Cool Power in February and March to clean up broadleaf weeds at that time. But then come April, May, June, I'd cut it and I would actually put Cool Power back
into the
program.
And look, you're still going out with sulfentrazone.
Yeah, because
like to add to all that of Cool Power, you still got dismiss in the tank.
Yeah, because from what I've seen, sulfentrazone in and of itself is a rather efficient killer of broadleaf weeds. I mean, sulfentrazone is, I almost call that the Swiss Army knife of weed controls, because you're talking about nutsedge, kylinga, certain broadleaf weeds, and certain grassy weeds all in one package as long as you time it right. So you're getting a lot. And for me, I literally would save Cool Power for the broadleaves that, for example, are still alive in November. I would save my second Cool Power app for that time. And the reason why I'd save it for that time is because I have a special target for Cool Power. And that target would be clover and wild violet. I mean, that has got...
I think that might interfere with... I'm sorry, Ray. It's just so that second app, we're talking in the fall. He does his seeding and aeration around that time. Unless he does it to the lawns that are either far long enough to where he could use it or ones that didn't get an overseed.
That's a good question, Aldo. And I think that provided his seeding is done in September and October, that's enough time for the grass to safely tolerate Cool Power again in November to get whatever clover and chickweed and violet happens to be up at that time. I think November is pretty safe, actually. I mean, it's not. And provided
those three AIs are all 28 days, right?
Yeah, they're about 28 days. That's correct. And So I think he's within a safe window, provided, and especially if he's like early and he gets his seeding done in September.
Yeah.
By November, I think he should be good. Yeah. I think he should be pretty good. And because I'm just looking at, like, for example, that project in Knoxville where the seeding was done in September, right? And that lawn got quinchloric and triclopyr in October.
Right. Lit that
and
shit
I
up,
checked
right?
back with what?
Yeah, you lit that shit up. It had quinchloric, it had the triplet, it had like, and it was hot.
Triclopyr. I mean, yeah, because that. But then that was on the basis of I also checked for adequate rooting and establishment of the seeded areas before I even thought about, you know, stirring all of that together and dropping it. I mean, that was the consideration. But then provided he's well established, I don't see a problem with seeding in September and then cleaning up any remaining broadleaves in November. I don't see a problem with that. And in fact, doing that in November will actually ensure that his customers go into February, March, April without a lot of the weeds. You know, they don't have to see that. They don't have to look at that, you know.
Just a good point. I was just considering, like, the, you know,
the seeding,
the time of year and how much work he has ahead of him still. And, like, hey, I'm ready for round seven, but, like, you know, it's I don't know if he has, like, you know, 1,000 accounts or, you know, 50.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's also,
you know what
too.
I mean? It's like, I'm ready for round seven, but like, it's only been, you know, 18 days since I put the seed down kind of shit, you know?
But here's the other thing is that, you know, provided you're properly calibrated, I've seen recently seeded turf grass be surprisingly tolerant of broadleaf herbicide. I've seen it pretty tolerant. I mean, so I'm not particularly alarmed by it, you know, as far as weed control, because I know my worry is not letting those bad actors go through winter and come back in the spring. That would be my overriding concern is I know violet and clover and chickweed are basically, according to Matt, the weeds in the transition zone that become nightmares because your standard low budget
three-way isn't gonna
weed
do
control
it.
Is not going to make it. But Lawn Care Monster here, I think he's gone extra by
he'll be all right.
Reaching straight for the Cool Power. I mean, because from what I've seen out of Cool Power, because I've actually used Cool Power, my God, Cool Power is something else.
I was going to bring up the sulfentrazone, but I think we've talked about that enough. I haven't brought up this tenacity in July. I have a question about that. Is this like a you're hit, you're going out there to try to identify any Bermuda or, you know, warm season grass that you may have in your fescue, or is it one of those just because apps? I got to put something down. I'm putting.
It could be. Go ahead. I have another theory.
I have the same question because for me, I would be dropping tenacity when I'd be seeding fescue. Actually, that's when I'd be laying down my tenacity, right? But to follow up with your point, Aldo, what if my July tenacity would be so that I could identify areas that are infested with, say, Bermuda or Zoysia? What if?
You can try and upsell a Pilex program or something.
A Reno or a...
Or
I'm even seeing, like, say somebody has a Bermuda or Zoysia issue, then I would add something to my fall herbicide applications in the form of ethofumisate.
Yeah.
And ethofumisate, by the way, is safe around a turf type tall fescue seeding. It's safe to apply. So that's another thing to consider. But then What if your July app of Tenacity is designed to highlight and call out Zoysia or Bermuda contamination? What do you think, Ryan?
I wonder if it's actually there to don't shoot the messenger. I wonder if it's there as a crabgrass post-emergent effort thing, half measure. Talked about rubbers.
I was giving the guy the benefit of the doubt.
You know, hey, you're fresh out, but there, gosh, you know, that saran wrap's in the drawer in the kitchen. Well, let's try it. It's hot. It's hot.
Okay.
Or I'll just turn this old one inside out. Whatever.
Yeah. It's
about as good as the 4 ounces of Tenacity.
Because do you know what I don't see in this program that I'd like to see?
And chlorine.
Yep. Because, Aldo, as you recall, when I'm dealing with a turf-type tall fescue lawn in the transition zone, my foundation herbicides for general weed control include quinclorac and triclopyr, right? Those two. Those two are part of the program, and for a reason, because quinclorac pulls actually double duty, because we're going after the clover, we're going after the violet, and we're also going after crabgrass. And that's all in one, whereas Tenacity, I got to caution people about using Tenacity on crabgrass. And my caution on using Tenacity against crabgrass is that Tenacity doesn't work on crabgrass or a lot of other weeds as a single 4 ounce per acre application. It just plain don't work. So what do you think, Ryan? Because am I on the right track on that one?
I think there's a lot of different things. The other thing I see here too, and I think this is a very Shaddix-esque approach, right? So, you know, N only and everything like that. You know, I think one thing that Dr. Shaddix will say, though, too, is that it's if you're going to plant seed, you got to make sure that you have a critical value of P out there, which I believe he's established from the literature is at like 35 parts per million on a Malic 3, something like that. And again, I'm one thing that burns me up is I know seed aeration makes a lot of money. The margins are great and everything like that, but I very seldom see the results match, you know, the investment from the customer. So that being said, you know, I'd want to make sure I had all my, you know, I's dotted, T's crossed on the seeding effort if that was what's going to happen. And again, does that mean you just go out there and apply P and don't care about a soil test or anything like that? So those are things that I would just be wondering about because, again, just the investment, the cost of those services, I'd want to make sure that we are set up for success. So just little things here. So
I got one more for you.
Oh, go ahead.
I got one more thing for you in that, you know what else I'm not seeing is we're going to be throwing down Amidas, right?
Yeah.
I want to know what is the pH of the soil that I'm putting down this Amidas on? I want to know because am I actually driving down my soil pH and making another problem? And of course, my other question is that why are we seeding so much? Why are we losing so much grass such that seeding is baked into the program? I mean, I that's like another question that I have in that why are we losing so much turf? I mean, because for me, that's a question that I would want to have answered if I'm going to invest in aeration and seeding. I want that answered, and I want a good answer for that.
Do you want I mean, I think there's two separate answers here. You know, you have the agronomic answer, and then you have the business answer. The agronomic answer would be that, you know, cool season grass in the transition zone, especially if it's unirrigated, you know, you're going to have some attritional losses no matter what you do. And despite your best efforts, and even if it's irrigated, you know, that can still happen if you're not on a strong fungicide program, this, that, and the other thing. So, you know, how best to deal with that is is probably the easiest and simplest way, not necessarily the most inexpensive way, is, you know, aeration overseed. So I think that's just dealing with a, you know, an eventuality or a contingency that just exists in that area of the country with this particular, you know, type of grass being cool season, and more specifically turf type tall fescue. Now, on the business side of things, I think that people have generally been conditioned that that's just something you have to do every year, whether you like it or not, right? I mean, it's, you know, hey, I got the vision insurance. I got to go get new glasses every year, right? Like, I'm paying for it. Well, I mean, you don't need new glasses every year. Your vision changed last couple of years. No, everything's fine. You know, I just want new frames. I just want some different cultivars in my lawn. So I do think that there is that aspect, and I see it all the time in consulting as people, wow, we surely need aeration overseed. Well, I mean, why? Well,
do you?
That's the only way you get. Do that's you? The only way you get new. That's the only way you get new grass in your lawn. I mean, seeding, yes, I get that, but you know, why are you so sure that those two activities should occur in conjunction, right, and not one separate from the other or whatever, depending on the situation? So, yeah, business wise, you make bank. You can bang a lot out. There's a lot of production there. So, you know, if you look at the profit per day, profit per week, shit stacks up pretty quick, and you ride that wave for, you know, 6, 8, 10 weeks, however long that is, you know, in your area. And yeah, I don't know. I have strong opinions about how that is a more often than not a check the box activity and not a strong outcome activity. So is what it is.
That's my opinion on that as well, Ryan, is that when I see aeration paired with seeding, all kinds of red flags go up for me, actually. All kinds of red flags. And the reason why the red flags go up is because I've seen an instance where somebody was told to aerate and then overseed a sports field. And guess what they got? Jack Zero Nada. The seed didn't work. So when somebody is going to pair seeding with aeration, I got to ask, okay, how much of the seed that you have broadcast do you anticipate actually germinating and contributing to the turf canopy? How much? Give me a number. And if somebody cannot tell me, okay, I'm going to put down this seed and more than 50% of it is going to germinate, then I'm going to say, try again. Let's do something that actually works.
I think that's what that's the long and short of it. So, Monker Monster, when you're ready to come back and, you know, you're not listening to good music and hopefully getting your soul sucked out of your body shortly thereafter, I would ask you to come back on the show and, you know, we'll put your soul in a spreadsheet and put it back in your body or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, something right. like that. I mean,
I like the program. The program looks good.
I think
here and there, but
the bones are there. I think it's tweaking. And I also think any program is only as good as its adaptability to special situations, right? If you have to tear the program up and throw it all away when you come into a special situation with a lawn that's difficult for whatever reason, or a customer that has high expectations, that's a shitty program. You know, it should be able to something that's a building block foundational. You have Xenon's
you got the Toro and you're like, oh, well, nope, can't use this, guys. Get over it.
Yeah.
Can't do that. Oh, yeah, because the one caveat that I have to give Lawn Care Monster is please don't apply 12 ounces per acre of sulfentrazone to Zoysia. Don't ask me how I know. Don't ask me how I know.
All right, boys, we are going to wrap it up there. We are also going to have a... not too abbreviated, but a shorter after show. Get through a couple of things here and kick it with our patrons. So if that sounds like something that you like to do, there are really there's only one way to do that. You have to go to www.patreon.com/burnandreturn. There, for the low price of somewhere between $4 and $20, you'll have elite and unfettered access to people that you see here on this panel and a number of other lawn care, turf, and horticulture psychos just like us. And it's really a beautiful place. It's a wonderful thing that people come together, help each other answer lots and lots of questions related to their lawns, their businesses, their lives, and so much more. So the other thing we'll get to do too is on our Thursday night show, soon to be Wednesday night, we hang out in the after show. And if we didn't say fuck enough, we will get all the other fucks out of our system shortly thereafter this show with a bunch of other adult talk where we look at different things around the industry. If you like Joe Knows Turf on our Bird of Return podcast, it is that times 10, and it's a lot of fun. For that, for right now, join us next Thursday. John Emerson on the program. It'll be a great time. It'll be our last Thursday for quite some time here as we switch to Wednesday, but we enjoyed having you here tonight. Thank you, Ray. Thank you, Aldo, and we'll see you later.
See ya.
Like and subscribe. You get to see Ray's kielbasa.
You like chorizo?
I like to smell.